online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again. This is Food FM.
The Drinking Hour with David Kermode in partnership with Club Onologique, the world through the lens of wine and spirits.
This week, South Africa. Its wine history dates back hundreds of years, yet it's celebrated for innovation. We'll hear what happened as international judges descended on the country to assess its wines. We'll find out what they thought, the latest trends, and the wines you simply have to try. To call South Africa New World is somewhat at odds with the historical facts. The first vineyards were established there in Constantia in 1685. However, South Africa's wine story has been a challenging one, and it's only really in the last few decades that its wines have taken the international markets by storm. The country, with its wonderful climate, offers an incredible ratio of price to quality, and its winemakers are celebrated for their dynamism. Last year, for the second year running, the IWSC took its international judges to South Africa to team up with local experts assessing hundreds of wines. A total of 570 medals were awarded, 18 of them gold. In charge, our good friend Dersiu Viana Jr., Master of Wine, and another good friend, Sophia Longhi, writer and doyen of social media, and she was on the judging team, and they both join me now. Sophia and Junior, welcome back to The Drinking Hour.
Thank you, David.
Thank you,
David. Lovely to be here.
It's lovely to have you both there, and what a trip it must have been to South Africa. It's impossible to capture the sheer diversity of South Africa in one answer, quite obviously, Junior, but what most excites you about its wines?
I think having the benefit of overseeing the tastings in those wonderful days in South Africa, what excited me the most was, I think, the overall quality and the overall consistency of South African wines in general. There were just short of 600 entries, and around, well over 80% of the wines achieved medals, which is remarkable. We had 17 golds, over 180 silvers, and over 300 bronze medal winning wines. And there was quite a diversity in terms of the medals were distributed from different regions, different styles, different grape varieties. So what excites me the most, David, I think, is the overall performance and see how well South Africa in general is doing at the moment.
Yeah, and it's worth saying at this point that this is a rigorous and very tough competition, isn't it, Junior? You preside over our judging, and you know it is really a major achievement to get a medal, and certainly to get a silver or a gold, isn't it,
David? You know, without being patronizing, but I think UK is one of this. It is the center, if not one of the big centers of the wine industry in the world, and the judges that we have the privilege to work with, they represent the best. Some of the best businesses in London. They are young. They also represent the future of the industry. And they are mostly buyers. And by definition, they are quite difficult to be able to give medals or high scores so easily. So they're not journalists looking for, you know, trying to promote anything. They actually, they're looking from the buyer's perspective. That tends to be a little bit more rigorous. So yes, I agree with you. IWC, it's much more rigorous. And I think a silver medal in this competition, I judge many competitions all over the world. I think IWC, a silver medal, it represents a really good achievement. In I think in most competitions, they'll probably be looking at gold.
Yeah, no, I would echo that. Mm-hmm. Sophia, let's bring you in.
Yeah.
Same question for you about what excites you about South Africa.
Mm-hmm. I think that the confidence of the winemakers has become really apparent. They're embracing the material that they're climate and their environment gives them. So the differences in terroir and the sunshine hours they get and the cooler regions and the coastal areas. I think there's less emulation of other styles now. So if they're making Cabernet Sauvignon, they're not emulating Bordeaux, or they're not emulating Northern Rome when it comes to Syrah. So I really do feel like the wines have very much come into their own. Yeah, and I think as well that confidence has come from a renewed focus on the quality of the grapes. So we all commented between us that they don't seem to be hiding anything now behind lots of oak, and the wines are much better for it. And, you know, the advances in the winery, like cool fermentation and stainless steel and concrete vats, etc. I really think we're seeing like honest winemaking shining through. Yeah, and getting a sense of what South Africa can really produce.
Yeah, good thought. And especially on Cabernet you mentioned there. We'll come to that later because that really does have its own kind of style. The country has really had a tough time of it of late, particularly through the pandemic with the restrictions. At one stage, there was, unbelievably, for a short period, even a ban on exports of wine. And there was a complete alcohol ban at one stage, which caused absolute... well, potentially ruin, actually, but certainly mayhem. Mm. It's winemakers, Sophia, they've bounced back, haven't they?
I think the winemakers have in terms of confidence. And but I would say it's going to take a really long time for the industry to bounce back. And because the wine sales ban in 2020 and 2021 was absolutely devastating for the industry. Mm. And wineries shut down, which... aren't to be opened again, and hundreds of wine growers went out of business, and you know, thousands of people lost their jobs. And I think that's going to take a long, long time to recover from. However, the producers that we spoke to when we were out there, they said they were quick to adapt. So they strengthened their export partnerships, became savvier when it came to online wine sales as well. So I think part of their recovery has been diversifying, not relying on one market, for example. And I also think there's been a big focus and renewal on of wine tourism. So they've been strengthening their offerings there, which has been bringing, you know, new revenue into the wineries that way, really.
Yes. And Junior, there's a lot of love in this market in the UK for the wines of South Africa, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Historically, it has been. When you talk about South Africa, especially with some specific grape varieties. But what Sophia said, I think there's been a renewed focus and a renewed energy and all focus on quality. So I think South Africa has had made good inroads in the past. And I feel that in the last 3, 4, 5 years, it's just the focus on quality. And I think everyone is enjoying it.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about some of those successful grape varieties. And let's talk about white wines first. Junior, it's fair to say Chenin Blanc is still South Africa's kind of calling card white variety, isn't it?
I think, David, I think it has to be. It's when you think about South Africa, especially when you think about white wine, you think of Chenin Blanc for a reason. I mean, they have around about 19,000 hectares of Chenin Blanc planted, and the variety has so many different facets and able to give lovely, easy drinking fresh white wines, but also making some serious oaked aged wines, and especially delicious. And we had the opportunity to taste a few examples over lunches and dinner with the judges of some old vine Chenin Blanc. And as Sophia said, that without the wines being too forced and without too much oak, just letting the sense of place shine through. And the wines are absolutely delicious. So, yes, it is one of the calling cards in terms of white varieties, and rightly so.
Yes, Sophia, there's something really magical about old vine Chenin, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. you get that, the depth and the layers, and you get the freshness and acidity that actually comes from the old vines rather than anything else. And I think that all those juxtapositions between freshness and richness and nuttiness and creaminess, it's just so beautiful and magical, as you say. We did have a gold scoring old vine Chenin, which is the Cullinoff 1679 single vineyard one, which is the 22 vintage. And my panel was lucky enough to judge that, actually. And so, that got a gold.
Well done. Yeah. I mean, Junior, old vines, really interesting. We're, to an extent, kind of, thanks to some great work from some of your fellow MWs, we're waking up to how special old vine wine can be. Why is it, do you think, that certain varieties, Chenin being a case in point, really shine when they're old vine versus some other varieties that might not be quite so special?
David, that's a very difficult question. I think Chenin in general, not only, so we're talking about South Africa today, but also in Loire Valley, when the vines age, we all know what happens. It's the roots go right down, and there's less production of fruit, and the ratio between skins, and we're not going to get too technical, but the ratio between skins and the pulp, it diminishes, and it gives such a wonderful concentration of flavors. And I think going back to Chenin, I think Chenin is not the most, I wouldn't call it an aromatic grape variety. It's maybe semi-aromatic. So when the old vines, with the amazing concentration of flavors and acidity, as Sophia mentioned, it does just lend itself extremely well to the old vines. And especially if the producers are confident enough not to smother in oak, it just give a little bit of kiss, just to add a little bit of layer of complexity. The wines can be absolutely delicious. And I think that's one of the reasons the Chenin does so well.
Which brings us neatly on to Chardonnay. And I think you had, Sophia, some really strong Chardonnay, didn't you?
We did. Chardonnay won 5 out of the 18 gold medals. So it was really the grape variety that led the gold medal count. But actually, the top scoring white wine was a Sauvignon Blanc Semillon blend. So that had 96 points. So even though Chardonnay kind of bagged the most golds, the one that kind of scooped the highest score was the Sauvignon Semillon blend.
Interesting. I mean, Junior, Chardonnay in South Africa, tell us what makes it special.
Well, as Sophia said, Chardonnay in general perform extremely well. And I think the interesting thing, David, I think it's obviously soils and climatic influences, and really being able to be confident in terms of winemaking. I think, and it has happened, and that was mentioned earlier, I think in the past there was a tendency to copy Burgundy. I think now they just, they found their own feet. They say, okay, we're not making Burgundy in South Africa. We're actually making Chardonnay, and they're being much better at it. And the great thing, it's you cannot even identify, okay, there's no this region or that region, because if you look at the medal, the medals that were distributed for the Chardonnay, they came from different parts, not only Stellenbosch and Franschhoek, but they many, many different parts of South Africa, and in different styles, some slightly more austere and fresh, and some a little bit more oak, but all with beautiful harmony, a lovely intensity of fruit, wonderful complexity, and a really good, well-judged oak. So I think South Africa and Chardonnay go very, very well together.
Sophia, some of this will come back to what you identified there, which is confidence, actually, you know, not necessarily trying to ape Burgundy, but actually having your own distinctive style of Chardonnay.
Definitely. I think coming back to what Gina was saying in the beginning, the diversity of styles from region to region, they were also different. And I think that's the winemakers knowing their land and knowing the right grapes for the right site, and having that confidence to show the world really what they can do. And so the Chardonnay styles, yes, there were some rich and buttery styles, but the styles that really stood out and that scored very highly were those with just a touch of oak, very fresh, very bright. And it's just amazing that out of a place where people really feel, you know, they think of South Africa, they think it's a very hot country, but these wines are so elegant. And as you can see from the results, they did really well.
Yeah. And yeah. Junior, Sauvignon and Semillon, Sophia mentioned that highest score in the gold category going to a white Bordeaux blend, effectively. Tell us about those two varieties and what we can expect from South Africa, because we probably don't know necessarily Semillon as well as we should from South Africa.
No, it's true. I think if talking about globally, I see more and more demand for Semillon. A lot of winemakers from South America, Argentina, Chile, looking at especially old vine Semillon, and also South Africa. They're so absolutely delicious. I've tasted some delicious Semillon from Franschhoek in the past. But in terms of talking about the blend itself, as we mentioned, we know that I don't recall the it'll come back to me in a minute. The top wine I think was Bloemendaal Wine States 2017, which was it was a Sauvignon blend, and it did wonderfully well. I was expecting, David, to see a little bit more 100% Sauvignon, which we didn't see. And we saw a lot of Sauvignon, but mostly in as components of blends. There were not that many 100% Sauvignon Blancs. And I really like Sauvignon Blancs from South Africa when they are well made, when they are not forced. They have a very specific personality, but very specific character. They're not quite New Zealand. They're not as powerful or as aromatic as New Zealand. I think they have a little bit of the expression from that fruit forwardness from New Zealand, but also they combine wonderful elegance and texture from France, for example. And I think they have a very specific style, and most people actually love those wines. And I don't think it was with the panels so enough 100% Sauvignon Blancs, but what we've seen during the competition did extremely, extremely well.
That's really interesting. Mm. Well, let's turn to reds. And Sophia, which red varieties scooped the top medals?
Well, it was a Pinot Noir, I think, that scooped the very top red medal. So it was La Vierge Apogée Pinot Noir 2021. So that was a really interesting one, very concentrated, lots of definition. Again, I had the pleasure of judging this wine, actually. Very lucky. One of our kind of combined tasting notes was that we said it had a really refreshing streak of minerality, finely integrated oak, and wild strawberries. And yeah, it was just a really beautiful, well-made wine. But I think generally, as Chardonnay kind of scooped the most gold medals for the whites, it was Cabernet Sauvignon that led the charge in terms of the most gold medals for the reds. And there's four golds awarded to Cabernets. So yes, they do say that Stellenbosch Cabernet is king, don't they? But and that did scoop a gold, but the highest scoring one was from Constantia, which was the Constantia Glenfive. Yeah, some beautiful red wines out there.
Yeah, I'll say, definitely. I mean, Junior, Cabernet Sauvignon, we made reference briefly to it earlier. It has a very distinctive identity in South Africa that's genuinely different to other parts of the world.
David, I think what I mentioned for Sauvignon Blanc is not dissimilar to Cabernet Sauvignon. It has that wonderful abundance of fruit due to the sunshine and lots of sunshine that South Africa receives, but also that wonderful freshness that it comes from coastal breezes. And we saw some really excellent examples. I think within the 17 goals, there were a couple of 100% Cabernet Sauvignons, and there were, I think, three or four blends. And again, from different parts of South Africa, from Constantia, from Paarl, from Stellenbosch, and even as far as north as Cederberg. But I think in common, they all had this combination of abundance of fruit and elegance. And if you do look at the descriptors that the judges use, it's not dissimilar to to some Bordeaux that are showing those wonderful signs of maturity with tobacco, cedar, a cigar box, leather, and all those descriptors that we come to associate to really fine Bordeaux. I'm not saying they are going that way, but it's just they have a hint of that with combined with the lovely dark fruits that the sunshine gives them.
I would add as well, I think the restrained oak was a real common theme with the best scoring Cabernets. Mm. So that kind of minerality and that freshness that Junior was just talking about, it really shone through. So it's true that the grapes aren't being hidden away or masked by anything anymore.
I get very excited about Cabernet Franc in various parts of the world. And I also get a little bit disappointed sometimes by Cabernet Franc in other parts of the world, in fairness. Mm. That's the nature of the grape. But I love it in South Africa. Was that your experience too?
I love it too. But I think in South Africa, you get so many different expressions, which is what's so brilliant. You know, you get those bright, juicy styles, like really red-fruited, to very fine, elegant styles as well. There was one Cabernet Franc that did really well, which was the Mentors Cab Franc 2020 from KWB. And this is one wine that consistently does well across all the competitions, actually, different vintages of it. Obviously, when we're tasting it, we don't know what it is, but it got a high silver. And in contrast to the kind of bright red fruits in Cabernet that I generally love, this one had quite dark fruits, like black fruits, florals, you know, violets, and it also had a spiciness to it. So it's just interesting that whatever our views of a certain grape variety is, if there's a wine that just stands out for what it is, it will do really well.
Yeah, Junior, what about you on Cab Franc in South Africa? Does that excite you too?
Cabernet Franc in general does excite me, especially when they're well made. And it comes in different spectrums. You go from a really cool climate, quite austere and a little bit vegetal, and I don't care so much for that. But then you go from right to the other side and you get some 14.5-15% Cabernet Franc. And for me, it loses all the elegance and the definitions. And I also don't care for that. But I do like Cabernet Franc when it's picked at the right time and has those wonderful refined tannins and those beautiful aromas. Cabernet Franc tends to be a wonderful blending component. And I've done blends in the past. I was very, very lucky to do some blending sessions with the late Denis de Bourdieu in Bordeaux. And when you put a little bit of Cabernet Franc in the blend, it's absolutely, it changes so much. As a variety per se, as I said, I do like it. One is well executed. To be completely honest, I didn't find many Cabernet Franc on our last visit that did that for me. There's no gold medal winning wines from this variety, which is a shame. So, but then we've been lucky also. The IWC, we did some tasting in Argentina this year, and there was some delicious Cabernet Franc from there. But I think South Africa, I would encourage producers to enter some of the premium Cabernet Franc so we can see what are they capable of.
Oh, yes, because it's definitely out there. So, get it into the IWSC because there's an appetite for it. Sophia had touched on Pinot Noir too. Junior, your thoughts on that really high-scoring Pinot Noir?
Yeah, delicious. Absolutely. As Sophia described, all the elegance, that finesse, the freshness that comes from those regions. I think Pinot Noir from South Africa, when it's coming from those valleys, from Elgin. In this case, it wasn't from Elgin, was a few kilometers from Elgin, Hemel and Arden. It's wonderful freshness coming from the sea, and it did show on the wine. Again, not forced, and really wonderful. It's just north of, I mean, people who know South Africa, those two regions, I mean, I think where Pinot Noir does best in South Africa is in that region. For those who like whale watching, they usually should go to Hermanus. And those regions are just a few kilometers north of that. and you have the sea influence, the freshness, and Pinot Noir does so wonderfully there. I tasted so many great Pinot Noir from South Africa recently from those areas, and they can be delicious. And also, I think we saw one of the wines we're talking about Pinot, but also we saw a sparkling Pinot that did extremely well during the competition. So not only reds, but also components of sparkling. I think Pinot does extremely well.
Yes, and Cap Classique represents incredible value, I think, for the, you know, the quality to price ratio. Yeah, exactly. Of Cap Classique is incredible. But we've talked about Chenin being the kind of signature white. Now, Pinotage can be a bit of a Marmite grape variety for some people. It's often, I would say, misunderstood. I think at a very basic level, cheap Pinotage could be pretty nasty. But at the top end, Sophia, very different story, isn't it?
Very different story. I think you're totally right that it's often misunderstood, and that reputation from, you know, 20 plus years ago still precedes it on the UK market, really. But the top end Pinotages are fantastic, and they're so diverse and varied in style. You get that the bold, punchy, dark fruited styles to light bodied, red fruited, really elegant, crunchy styles. And it was just brilliant, really, to taste our way through them and see those differences. And I think that some of the wilder styles, you know, you get these wild red fruits, wild strawberries and raspberries, and it's very different to what we think, what we have in our minds, you know, that whole burnt rubber note that I think is just quite outdated now, actually. They can be really, really, really elegant.
Junior, what's the key to great Pinotage?
I think finding a good site in terms of... in South Africa, I mean, it has been the USP for many, many years. And as Sophia described, it's exactly as it is. The key is not being too greedy in terms of yield. So being ambitious. I think that if I have to say, okay, what's the key? The key is to be ambitious. So find a really good spot, lower yields, and then just let the grape variety shine through, because the quality has not always been great. But judging by what we've seen in our trip, it's the reputation that Pinotage had is no longer relevant, for sure.
You see. Yeah, longer fair.
It's no longer fair. If same thing we're talking about, globally. If you're talking about Carmenere and what we think of Carmenere, it's no longer. I was in Chile a few days ago, there's some delicious Carmenere. The reputation of Pais, for example, the reputation for Zweigel, people think, oh, it's such a simple wine. No, it can be amazing. And Pinotage is the same. Pinotage, the reputation is one thing, but the quality, I mean, the first night we were there, we had dinner, we had a Pinotage, and the quality of this wine was exceptional. So
yeah.
I think it's just a question of being, perhaps relaunching the whole thing about Pinotage and being promoted in a better way. But the quality of the best Pinotage in South Africa are simply world-class.
When we were talking to Debbie Thompson from the Grand Domain, you know, she was saying 20 years ago, we just didn't know how to treat Pinotage. We didn't know how to really make wine with it. I mean, with some exceptions, Canon Cop being one of them. But she was saying, you know, one of the mistakes, in a way, was the over-extraction. The fermentation was too warm. So with the advent of cool fermentation and gentle extraction, the grape variety actually expresses itself really beautifully. So, I think now it's about the right sites and the right handling.
Maybe it's, I remember that conversation, actually. You're right.
Yeah.
Maybe in the past, I think people were treating Pinotage almost like Cabernet Sauvignon.
That's right.
And the high temperatures. And you have to understand the parents of Pinotage being who they are, Pinot Noir and Sansot, and they are very thin skin varieties. So you just be gentle in terms of extraction. You lower the temperature. You don't put so much oak. You're not too greedy in your vineyard, so you lower your yields. You get a lovely concentration of fruit, and you have a wonderful, harmonious a delicious wine with balancing freshness, and it can rival some of the really good Pinot Noirs.
And definitely. I expect the place that you had that extremely memorable Pinotage on the first night, based on my trip the previous year, was that Cannon Cop by any chance?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, they're lovely hosts, aren't they?
Yes.
Wonderful people, wonderful wines, some beautiful dogs, great food, great conversation. This is all what it's all about, you know, having great people, great wine, great conversations, and it's just a wonderful experience.
Talking of wonderful experiences, at Sevilla, I think you, like me the previous year, also went to Vergelegen, and I'm not sure I've pronounced that correctly. You're the expert. your friend Libby is the expert. I believe you went there. That's an incredible place, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe you pronounce it Vergelegen.
Okay, I stand correct.
Who am I? I've had a pronunciation lesson from the marketing director there. I think it's Vergelegen. But yes, oh my gosh, the views from that winery are incredible. And we had a beautiful lunch overlooking the lake and the mountains. And they have a kind of safari park in a way. They have their own kind of wild grounds where we saw just animals grazing and doing their thing. We saw some quaggas, which I think that's how you pronounce that, but they're kind of like half zebras, half donkeys. And tasted some beautiful wines overlooking all of that. So yeah, I mean, there are few countries that will rival South Africa, I think, for the scenery. It's jaw-dropping.
And the hospitality is very generous, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. The warmth, the generosity, the food, because obviously food is a big part of the culture. We had a beautiful kind of farmer's dinner in Durbanville, and lots of fresh produce and seasonal treats. Yeah, it was lovely.
Junior, South Africa does so much so well. What advice would you give its winemakers based on your experience of that overview you get from presiding over the judging process?
Now, Sophie was talking about the lunches and dinners and all that, and it was bringing some lovely memories. In terms of advice, I think Sophie would agree with me. Having those moments with the wine producers, it seems like they work together very well. I mean, they talk to each other in a wonderful way. Maybe, okay, they are the neighbors. You may see them as a competitor, but in this case, there was a sense they were working together. And I think that's a great thing to see from a professional. Wineries working, neighbors working together to make the region, to make the country stronger. And my first advice here, that should always continue. In terms of the competition in general, in terms of the IWSC, I think one advice, this is a great competition. As I said earlier, we have some of the best judges, some of the best businesses, retailers and sommeliers and so on. So it just represents an opportunity for them to put the wines in front of those guys. It's just a very, probably the best way of knowing where you stand as a winery. It's the best benchmarking you will get. So they should really think about entering wines in the future, and also to be ambitious. I mentioned, okay, you asked me about Chenin Blanc. There were some great wines, and we enjoyed them, but I don't think there were as many top-end Chenin as we would like. And Pinot Noir also, we tasted some amazing wines. We know how great South African Pinot Noirs can be, which I think we'd like to see more Pinot Noir. So that's another advice. Just enter your top wines. You go to the competitions around the world, people should be entering their top wines because we have some of the best judges. This is a great opportunity just to gain international recognition and hopefully maybe to catch attention of some of the buyers. And aside this competition, I think what else I can advise them is just never to stand still. Always continuing on researching, continue developing the vineyards and the wineries, doing trials. Also, South Africa, we mentioned Vergelegen. One thing Vergelegen does wonderfully well, and other also South Africa in general does wonderful well, is a social responsibility, and what they're doing in terms of or how they're recovering the terroir is incredible. So South Africa has been doing that well, and I think also they must continue doing that. They must continue to communicating what they're doing, but they also should be looking more and more towards sustainability. And this is where we are, the industry, this is where we're going. So benchmarking, continuing research, look at sustainability. I think some of the things I would suggest they do.
Okay, well, that's Junior's to-do list. Sophia?
Well, I would definitely heed Junior's to-do list. But I would just say stay confident, because the winemakers know the land, and they know their terroir. They know what grows best where, and the grapes are better than ever quality-wise. So allow that to shine through, really. You know, there's not much advice I can give them because they seem to be doing pretty well without it. But I think confidence and ambition, as Junior said, they go hand in hand, really. Yeah, the native grape varieties are brilliant. So they know what works. They just show the world, really.
Yeah, well, be confident in yourself is very good advice. So I think that's also well worth heeding. Final question. We tend to do a desert island wine at the end of a chat most of the time on this podcast. And so we're going to play a little kind of limited version of it, because we're going to limit it to South Africa, because that's what we're talking about. So if you had to choose desert island wine from South Africa, you're stuck on a desert island, you can only have one, but money is no object. You can have whatever you like, but it's only one. Sophia, put you on the spot first while Junior's frantically have time to think. What would you say, Sophia?
Well, one of the wines that really just stuck with me, stuck in my head, stuck in the albums on my phone, which I've highlighted, was the David and Nadia Platbos Chenin Blanc 2018. So we tasted that when we were out for lunch when we first got there, actually. And it's an old vine wine, single vineyard, and it's just such a beautiful expression of Chenin Blanc. It's concentrated, it had salinity, it was fresh but rich at the same time, and it's that sort of, you know, dream roast chicken wine. So if I can find some chickens on the island and make a fire, I think that is pretty much heaven to me.
Yeah, and some potatoes maybe as well, and perhaps a little bit of, find a little bit of bacon under a bush somewhere as well. You're making me salivate here. This sounds like quite a fun desert island, even though it's only got one available wine. Junior, same question for you.
David, that's a difficult question, but if we're talking about desert island, I'm thinking of Sunshine. I don't know if it's gonna be somewhere really hot and. So it's got to be a white wine. I was so lucky to preside over an amazing group of judges, and I trust them fully. So I'll pick the very best white wine that we selected, which was the Bloemendaal Wine State Sauvignon Semillon Blend 2017. I've tasted the wine, well, obviously blind during the competition. And I was lucky to taste also during one of the dinners. That time wasn't blind. And it was absolutely wonderful. And as I described earlier, it was just elegant and gentle, as you expect from Loire Valley, with the lovely details of fruit that you expect from other slightly warmer regions of the plant Sauvignon Blanc in the world. But it had that age. The wine is five, 6 years old. So it had a lovely complexity. And one thing that I remember about this wine, it was its elegance and its texture. And it was not trying to be anything else, but just an imprint from that terroir, from Durbanville, and the wine was delicious. So that will be, I put my faith on our judges, and I'll pick that wine.
Yeah.
Nice choice, Junior.
Yeah, I think, well, if you're both on the same desert island, then I suppose we've got two very, very good wines, and you're knocking up a roast chicken as well on the fire, Sophia. So actually, this is starting to sound quite appealing, actually. That's
fantastic. You've transported me back to my time there just a year and a half ago with that amazing hospitality and that warmth and those great wines. So thank you very much for painting those pictures for us from your very memorable judging in South Africa. Junior, Sophia, thanks so much for joining us on The Drinking Hour.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, David, for inviting us.
The Drinking Hour with David Kermode in partnership with Club Onologique, the world through the lens of wine and spirits.
Let's round off, as ever then, with some of the top medal winners from that in-situ assessment of the wines of South Africa. 570 medals, 18 gold, 190 silver, and more than 350 bronze. Chardonnay was the variety that led the gold count with 5 out of those 18 gold medals. Here's an example that won a gold and went on to win a trophy for Best in Show. Mont Rochelle Mico Chardonnay 2018 from Franschhoek, Western Cape. The tasting note speaks of great intensity to the plum, lime and crunchy apple. The creamy palate stays fresh and with zingy acidity and a long vanilla nutty finish, showing some lovely evolution with great drive and passion. Here's another gold medal winning Chardonnay that also scooped a trophy. Capensis Celine 2021 from Stellenbosch. The judges said a delicate nose led by citrus notes leads to a layered and complex palate showing butterscotch, nuts, tangerine, passion fruit and spice. This is silky and poised with well-integrated oak and a long finish. The highest scoring white wine, referenced earlier, I think, by Sophia, was a 2017 Sauvignon Blanc Semillon blend. Blomendal Wine Estate, Cannenberg 2017, 96 points for this. Lovely, rich, golden colour, said the judges. The nose is enticing and shows a level of evolution. The palate is layered and complex with an abundance of fruit, honey, spice, nuts and a beautiful minerality. Poised and elegant with a long finish. And another gold medal winning blend of Sauvignon and Semillon that scooped a trophy, the Tangram White Blend 2020 from Durbanville Hills, described as having an intense palate of citrus and green melon, sitting well with the pastry and cinnamon notes. A wave of salinity and nuttiness adds complexity to the generous and persistent finish. I mentioned Constantia at the start with its long history. Well, here's another wine that scooped a gold with 96 points. Constantia Glen 5 2020. The judges said this, fabulously perfumed, bursting with aromas of dense damson and pretty violet, opening into flavours of juicy cassis, wild herbs and earthier nuances of mushroom and forest floor. All framed beautifully by a vibrant minerality. Sophisticated and extremely classy. And a red next, also winning 96 points. So a strong gold for Apogee Pinot Noir 2021 from La Vierge Cellars. Described this way by the judging panel, which included Sophia. A bright lifted nose of wild strawberries and violets with a melee of spiced berries on the palate and a refreshing streak of minerality. Lovely fruit concentration and finely integrated oak with a persistent creamy finish. And that's it for this week. Well done to those top medal winning wines and to all of the winners, in fact. My thanks to Junior and Sophia and to you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
The Drinking Hour with David Kermode in partnership with Club Onologique, the world through the lens of wine and spirits.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.